Of Daf Nun Zayin Amid Beis, four lines down from the top, the two dots, and we're talking about the Mishnah in Mikvos that we spent some time on in the last shiur. And the Mishnah quotes Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shel Tzemer V'Shel Seyar Ein Chotzitzin. And if you recall, we were speaking about these different ties around our hair, like for example, strips of wool or strips of hair that she takes from another woman. And Rabbi Yehuda tells us that that's not a chatzitza. Mipnei shamayim boim bahen. That between the strips of wool and her hair, there's enough of a space such that the water could get in there. It's not a chatzitza. And the implication, therefore, as far as Shabbos is concerned, would be that she would be allowed, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to go out into Rosh Hashanah wearing these different hair pieces. Because if it's not a chatzitza, then there's no fear that she would take them off on her way to the mikveh. Now, the Mishnah only cites Rabbi Yehuda with regard to the case of Shel Seyar. The Tanakhama never spoke a word about Shel Seyar. And we're not sure exactly what the opinion of the Tanakhama would be with regard to Shel Seyar. Om Rav Yosef, Om Rav Yehuda Meshmuel, Halacha k'Rav Yehuda b'chutei tzemer. Surely there's a machlokas, that there's no question about, with regard to these strands of wool. And Rav Yosef, in the name of Shmuel, paskins like Rav Yehuda l'kula, and that's a double kula, it means that it's not a chatzitza, and therefore there's no room or reason to prohibit it on Shabbos. Notice that Rav Yosef singles out chutei seyar, completely omits mention of shel seyar, meaning human hair. Amalei Abaye, halacha michlal de pligi. The very fact that Rav Yosef says that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda in the case of chutei seyar. Oh, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I said that Rabbi Yehuda omits mention of chutei seyar. Just the opposite. He omits mention of chutei tzemer. That's what I meant to say. I apologize for that. So there's no mention of chutei tzemer. And the implication of Rav Yosef's formulation is that as far as chutei tzemer is concerned, we're going to paskin l'chumra, like the Rabbanah, like the Tanakhama of Rabbi Yehuda, which means that chutei tzemer is a problem of chatzitza, and therefore is a problem of Shabbos b'shus harabim. However, we're going to paskin like Rabbi Yehuda l'kula in the case of chutei seyar, and Abai derives from Rabbi Yosef's formulation that there must have been a machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yosef regard to chutei seyar. And the Tanakhama never mentioned the word about chutei seyar. V'chitema, and if you'll say, as far as the Tanakhama is concerned, that for sure the chutei seyar are a chatzitza, I lav d'shaminan mi Tanakhama d'ayre b'chutei seyar, I unami lo havi mayre. If not for the fact that it was understood from the Tanakhama that the Tanakhama would have been referring even to chutei seyar, although he didn't spell it out explicitly, then Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't have mentioned that. You know, Rabbi Yehuda is not the first one of the Tanoim in this brisa to address the question of the status of chutei seyar. He didn't invent it out of nowhere. He must have been commenting on the Tanakhama. And therefore, by implication, in this v'chitema, it would seem that the Tanakhama would hold that even in the case of chutei seyar, it's still considered a chatzitza. And now it makes sense that Rabbi Yehuda would argue that just like chutei tzemer, he, in his opinion, it's not a chatzitza, so too chutei seyar is not a chatzitza. So the Gemara rejects this v'chitema, because v'dilma perhaps, kishem ka'omer lehu. What Rabbi Yehuda was saying was that my ruling, which is again the lenient ruling with regard to chutei tzemer, should be extended to include chutei seir as well. Ki hechi demodisuli bechutei seir. And what he meant to say was that, look, you, the Tanakhama, mentioned nothing, you didn't whisper a word about chutei seir. And the implication is that chutei seir would certainly not, would not posit a chatzitza. Therefore, agree with me in chutei tzemer as well. Oduli nami bechutei tzemer. So we're not going to assume that the Tanakhama held that chutei seir is a chatzitza, and Rabbi Yehuda therefore disagreed with him. No, on the contrary. The common ground between Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda, kuli amar lo pligi, is that chutei seir is not a chatzitza. And then Rabbi Yehuda builds on that, and he says, well, if you've gone as far as to admit to me that chutei seir is not a chatzitza, then let's go one step further, and you should agree with me that chutei tzemer is not a chatzitza. And now the Gemara wants to support Abaye's analysis that both the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda agree that chutei seir is not a chatzitza. Itmar, Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Shmuel, modim chachomim l'Rabbi Yehuda v'chutei seir. In other words, the only machlokas between Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda is regarding chutei tzemer, but with chutei seir, they both agree, even the Tanakhama, I should say, agrees to Rabbi Yehuda, and there's no chatzitza. Tanya Namihochi, and we have an Ebraisa as well. Chutei tzemer chotzitzin, but chutei seir ain chotzitzin. And this is the Tanakhama of this Braisa, which reflects the Tanakhama of the Mishnah in Mikvos, namely that chutei tzemer is a problem, but chutei seir is not a problem at all. It's not a chatzitza. And Rabbi Yehuda omer shel tzem vishel seir ain chotzitzin. Rabbi Yehuda said, well, you know what? You went as far as to agree with me that chutei seir is not a chatzitza. Let's go one step further, apply by analogy the same logic, and chutei tzemer should not be a chatzitza. And now the Gemara is going to again support this position that even the Tanakhama agrees that chutei seir is not a chatzitza from a different mishnah. Omer Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Masnisa Nami Deka. We could derive this from a meticulous reading of a mishnah. And here's the Mishnah later on in this perek on Daf Samach Dalet, the Siyata Dishmaya, and the Mishnah says the following: Yotza Isha Bechutei Seir Bein Mishala Bein Mishal Chaverta. Now again, we don't know who the author of this Mishnah is, whether this reflects the Tanakhama or Rabbi Yehuda, but the Stam Mishnah would equate Seir, meaning Seir Shalisha, with a Seir of Chutei Seir. Now, again, Chutei Seir here is not the same as Chutei Tzemer. That's obvious. But nevertheless, we're talking about Chutei Seir that have the same status, whether they're hard, natural hair or the hair of someone else. Mani, now let's analyze this. Who is the author of this Mishnah? Ilam Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda would have told us a bigger Chiddush. He didn't have to tell us about Chutei Seir. He could have told us about Chutei Tzemer. Afilu Chutei Tzemer Nami. And if he didn't tell me this Chiddush, and he's only vacillating back and forth to tell me, well, what's the story of strands of hair, then it must be that it's in Chutei Tzemer, it would be definitely a chatzitza, which means this price reflects the sheet of the Chacham El Elav, Rabbonon, he, Shmamino B'Chutei Seir, Lo Pligi. This price again supports that view of Abaye, that with regard to Chutei Seir, there was never machlokas between Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda. Everybody agrees it's not a chatzitza, Shmamino. This is certainly a proof. So we have a number of different sources and proofs, culminating in this proof from the Mishnah that there was never a machlokas about chutei seir, and even the Tanakhama agrees that chutei seir are not a chatzitza. Here we have a chiddush, by the way, the Rashba. The Rashba says that chutei seir are not a chatzitza when they're tied onto the hair. Let's say you would take chutei seir and tie it onto your skin. I don't know why you do such a thing. That would be a chatzitza. Now the Mishnah says, Lo b'totefes. She doesn't go out with a totefes, which reminds us of the tefillin. And it means that it's something that she wears on her forehead, on her forehead. And my totefes, the Gemara doesn't know exactly what totefes on Rabbi Yosef, chumarta dekitifta. Wow, if we didn't know what totefes is, how much more so we don't know what chumarta dekitifta is. You know, it's like when they teach a child Taich from Lashon Kodesh reading the Chumash into Yiddish, they assume that he understands the Yiddish and not the Chumash, but in most cases these kids understand the Lashon Kodesh better than they learn the Yiddish, and the Taich is only a way of teaching them Yiddish. Anyway, so what's this totefes? So the Gemara says it's a charm packet. And Rashi explains that it's one to ward off the evil eye. You know, this is something like we spoke about earlier in the Perek, earlier in the Masechta, with regard to an amulet that also is used to ward off the Ayin Hara. It's Keneged and Ayin Hara. And this was worn around the neck. It was suspended from the neck. Or alternatively, it might be pearls that women wore around the neck. And all this was to ward off the evil eye. And if a person, for example, is ill, so we had a Gemara once about whether or not he's allowed to wear an amulet, and we said it might depend upon a mumche, meaning if this amulet was, shall we say, was offered by an expert, it was prescribed by a mumche, and not only that, it's proven itself to be successful, then that's the status of an amulet. Now, Amalei Abaye says, wait a minute, if this totefes is in fact a kind of an amulet, meaning it's against the Nietzar of the Ayin Hara, is Tehevi Kameo, let it be like an amulet mumche that has been created by, or at least validated by an expert, Vitishtere. And it should be mutter, because we're going to allow wearing an amulet if that amulet was proven to be successful. And perhaps that amulet had names of Hashem on it. It may have been a combination of herbs. I mean, again, all this we'll have to learn when we learn about Kamiya. But we had a Gemara back on Mem Gimel that if the amulet was prepared by an expert, or at least it was proven to be successful on three occasions when it was worn by an ill person, then it's permitted. And you're allowed to wear it. So Abai's going to ask Rav Yosef, in the case of this chumarta de ketifta, we'll call it a necklace that's worn around her neck, if it was successful and it was proven by a mumche or by experience, it proved to be good, then it should be mutter. El Amar Rav Yehuda Mishmei Dabaye Apuzainu. We have a new definition of a totefes. A totefes is something that's worn on the forehead. Right? Just like tefillin shorash are worn up high above the forehead, so too apuzaihu of sainu is likewise some sort of an ornament that's worn all the way on top of the forehead. And we may need a little bit more of a description of what it looked like. Tanya Namiyachi learned in the Braisa, Yotza Isha Bisvacha Hamuzheves. Do you see that? Muzheves means decorated with gold. And a svacha is some sort of a hat. Now, this hat is a tachshit, because it's studded with gold. And in general, when we speak about hats on Shabbos, we're pretty much convinced that a woman would not take it off to show it to a friend, so therefore there's no there's no chash in the case of a shvacha. However, we're a little bit in the ambiguous, you know, the twilight zone when it comes to this kind of svacha, which is musheves, because unlike a hair, you know, a hair hat that covers your hair, she's not going to take off her hat, but she may take off this particular item because it's musheves. It is basically an ornament, and she may want to show it to her friends. But the chiddush of this braisa is no, that since it's still a hat and it does cover her head, therefore it's mutter. That's case number one in the braisa. Now we get to case number two, which is more up our alley, because b'totefes u'b'sarvitin akvuim ba, and again we have a totefes and we have something called sarvitim. So this totefes is something which she wears on the front of her head, on her forehead, or a little bit above her forehead. And sarvitim are different things that are attached to the totefes, and are perhaps other kinds of precious pearls or stones that are worn as ornaments. Now, the impression you get from the braisa here is that we're talking about ornaments. You know, we're talking about decorations. We're talking about tachshitim. We're not discussing something that is like an amulet, like a kameya, which is the purpose of which is to ward off the evil eye. Now, again, let's emphasize that the word shvacha entails some sort of, not so much a hat that she wears, but more or less a net that she wears over her hair. And that you'll see throughout Tanakh. But our Gemara refers to this head covering, the purpose of which is to hide the hair from view. So it's not transparent like a net. And that could be the reason why this braisa says that Yotze Isha Bisvacha, because it actually covers her hair and hides it from view. She wouldn't take that off. This despite the fact that it's musheves. And in the case of those ornaments that she wears on the top of her head, like totefes, that have sarvitim kvuim ba, it seems that totefes is not something, as we said before, to ward off the evil eye, but rather it's some sort of an ornament of a jewelry that she wears. And anything worn to ward off the evil eye would not be attached to the hat. In any event, the Mishnah prohibits wearing these ornaments, and it mentions these kinds of totefes. That's what we derive here. Now, the Gemara tries to get into more detail about the difference between Ezi Totefes v'Ezu Sarvitin. Om Rabbi Avo, Totefes Hamukefes la me'ozen li'ozen. So this is something that she wraps around her head, and it goes from one ear to the other. So it's really high up on the forehead, similar to tefillin. And you also might equate it with tzitz, which was worn on the forehead of the Kohen Gadol. But Rabbeinu Chananel does emphasize that the name Totefes derives from the fact this ornament was worn above the forehead in the place where you wear tefillin. And hence we understand the Gemara's statement that it's me'oz and li'oz, and it goes from ear to ear. That can only be on the top of the forehead, above the forehead. Sarvitim hamagim la ad lichayeha. The lichayim are the cheeks. And now we're talking about something that's wrapped around her head, but it sort of hangs over. And on both sides, above the ear, right, there's a wrap, but then what hangs down, these kind of ornaments reach all the way to her cheeks. Amar Rav Huna, Anios Osinosan Shalminitziv Onim. Ashiros Osinosan Shalkesef Vishal Zahav. So the poorer women will fashion these ornaments out of colored fabrics, whereas the wealthy women will fashion them out of silver and gold. Now, Rav Huna is teaching us that a wealthy woman would be permitted to wear frontlets made of fabrics, and she could wear that outside Rishus HaRabim. She's unlikely to take them off and boast about such an ornament to friends, because they're not up to par with her standard of living and her stature. However, other Rishonim disagree, and they maintain that Rav Huna means to say that wearing frontlets and head bangles of colored fabric is forbidden for all women. They're all ornaments, and they may be shown to a friend, and we have to be choshesh for havaras dalet amos b'shus harab. That's the shita of the Tosfos HaRosh against the shita of the Ritva. Amar Rav Huna, okay, that we did. V'lo, we go back to the Mishnah, lo bekavul, and we were wondering what the word kavul was. You know, we said it was a wooden calf, and that would seem to be the conclusion of the Gemara that we'll get to on Daf Nun Ches. Amar Rav Yane, kavul ze eini yodea mahu, I doubt, I vacillate as to what exactly a kavul in the Mishnah is. E kavla di avdotnan, is it a kind of a hat that's worn by a shivcha? Well, it says eved here, but you know, generally speaking, we're talking about a shivcha. And basically, what the Mishnah is addressing a shivcha, a slave woman in English, and is forbidding her from wearing a kavla, this kind of a hat. And apparently this hat had an emblem on it, which would identify the status of the slave, or in this case the shivcha, as such. Aval kippa shel tzemer shapir dami, but we could be more lenient in the case of a wooden cap made out of wool, woolen cap, that's called kippa shel tzemer. And according to the first tzad in Rav Yane Safek, that would be okay. And maybe what he means to say is that since it's made out of wool, therefore this, it's highly unlikely that she would she'd be tempted to take it off. Again, it might be considered a tachshit, but it's not the kind of tachshit that a woman would remove in public, either because it's made of tzemer, which is less expensive, or alternatively because it covers her hair, and she would not expose her hair in public. O dilma kippa shel tzemer tnan, v'kolshken kavla di avda. Maybe, in fact, the Mishnah is talking about this cap, this woolen cap, and telling us that you're not allowed to wear it, this kavul, in Rishus HaRab. Because again, it goes without saying that kavla di avda is certainly something that should be excluded. So basically, Rav Yanai vacillates back and forth as to what would be the status of a kippa shel tzemer. One side would say, well, she's allowed to go out with a kippa shel tzemer because there's no chashash that she'll take it off and expose her hair. Or shall we say, no, the Mishnah prohibits even the case of a woolen cap, a kippa shel tzemer, and it goes without more so the emblem on the garment, or on the garment of a slave woman is certainly prohibited. And let's just add the following point. If the Mishnah is referring to a woolen cap, and that's what the Mishnah means when it calls it a kavul, then beyond a doubt, the slave's kavla that's the more general meaning of the word kavul, would certainly have to be prohibited. Now, Tosis raises the following question. The Mishnah mentions that Chazal were more lenient with regard to a kavel than with regard to other ornaments. And that the Nafkamina was a chatzer, if you recall. And you were allowed, we allowed the women to go out into the chatzer with a kavul. Now let's assume that kavul is a wooden cap that women wear. If that be the case, it makes sense that we might allow her and be more lenient in the case of the chatzer. Because this ornamental wooden cap is something that would make her attractive in the eyes of her husband. But the question we want to ask is, okay, fine. That's understood. And we may want to be mekil in the case of a kavul vis-a-vis a chatzer. But what about the case of a slave woman that we spoke about before? And what reason would Chazal have to come up with a special matir, a special kula, in the case of the kavla di'avda? And Tosa suggests that Chazal were very concerned in the case of an eved, that if he was released from the obligation on the part of his master to wear this emblem, then he would not want to disrespect his master on Shabbos. And if the master sees that the slave is not wearing his emblem, he might interpret it kind of like as an insult, as a rebellion. So that's one way of understanding why Kavla, even if it's a case of some sort of an emblem that the slave wears, we could still be mekil and allow this to be worn on Shabbos. And that's what the Braisa means when it says Yotza Isha Bekavul. And that Yotza Isha Bekavul, because we're not afraid she'll take it off her hat and expose her hair, that could apply also to the case of the Eved or the Shivcha, because she would be very sensitive to take off a garment that has an emblem on it, because that would be perceived perhaps as a disrespect to the master. So now again, just summarizing, so far we have a braisa, and the braisa seems to support the interpretation of kavul as a kippah shel tzemer. And the braisa continues by saying uve istima lechatzer. Not only a kavul is mutter in a chatzer, but even an istima is permitted in a chatzer. Again, provided that she doesn't go out to rishus harabim. And later on, the Gemara is going to tell us what this istima is. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, another shita in this braisa, af bekavul rishus harabim. We can even be mekil with regard to a kavul, and this would seem to indicate that that a kavul is in fact a kippah shel tzemer, and since it's used to cover her hair, she would not. We don't have to worry or suspect her of possibly taking it off her head. And therefore we could be mekil in a chatzer. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, af bekavul shus harabim. Once you went that far and you'd say that kavul, she doesn't want to expose her hair, then don't just limit your leniency to the case of chatzer. We should extend it to rishus harabim as well. And Klal Omer Rav Shimon ben Elazar, Rav Shimon went a step further, he made a general rule, Kol shu lamata min hasvacha yotzim bo, Kol shu lamala min hasvacha Ein Yotzim Bo. So the different types of tachshitim, of ornaments. The first type is worn underneath her hat. Again, you might ask, and we asked this question in the past, I mean, if it's underneath her hat, who's going to see the jewelry? Why is she wearing this ornament, this savacha? It probably means that part of it is underneath the hat, but part of it goes below the hat. Then it says, Kol shula mala min asvacha. If the ornament is above the hat. And here, Rav Shimon Elazar claims there's no hesitation or inhibition on her part to take it off, because it's worn outside, it's worn over the hat. So even if she took it off, she would not be exposing her hair, because she has a hat below, you know, that's below the svacha. And in that case, we can allow her to go out with it in Rishus HaRabim. And that's Rav Shimon Elazar's heter, that a woman could go out with a kavul when it's worn underneath a hat, which means he understood kavul to refer to this ornamental woolen cap as opposed to a slave's emblem. Just to summarize the brice of Rabbi Avo, we can say that in the case of Kippah Shel Tzemer, which is a hat made of wool, the Tanakhama of this brisa would be lenient as far as a chatzar is concerned, but he wasn't able to be mekil going even beyond the chatzar into Rishus HaRabim, and he equates an istima with a kavul, and we'll see what istima is soon. Rav Shimon ben Elazar is willing to go a step further and allow kavul even in Rishus HaRabim. And the reason for that is because he has a general rule that it all depends on what's lamala minasvacha. And if you have a kavul that's lamala minasvacha, then we might as well allow her, be lenient a step further, and even allow Rishus HaRabim. She's not about to take off the svacha, which is underneath the hat. But when it comes to something that she wears on top of the hat, then ein yotzim bo. My istima, what exactly is an istima? And again, let's just emphasize one more point, that according to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, although he's going to allow, in the case of kavul, if it's worn underneath a hat, he's going to allow it to go out even in Rishus HaRabim, but clearly, he's not talking about a slave's emblem that we spoke about before. The kavla di avda, and that's not part of his discussion here. My istima, Amar Rabbi Avo bizyoni, my bizyoni, Amar Abaye Marav kalya pruche, a scarf that's worn for holding back stray hairs. So in other words, a woman will braid her hair, she'll put up her hair whatever way she wants to do it, but inevitably there are stray hairs that escape the braids, they protrude from whatever hat or cap she's wearing, and in order to cover these stray hairs, she would wind a small scarf around her head below the brim of her hat, and that scarf is called kalya pruche, one that holds back that which flies, because it holds back the stray hairs that fly, that protrude. And Chachamim prohibited wearing this scarf in Rishus HaRabim. They were concerned perhaps a woman might remove it to show someone else. However, once again, they were mekil in a chatzer, and they allowed her to wear kalya pruche in a chatzer. Tana Rabbanan, we learned to the Brisa, Shlosha Nemru, Dvarim Nemru bi Istima. There are three different halachas that are relevant to an istima. Number one, Ein Ba Mishum Kilayim. It's not considered what we call Derech Levisha. Right? The Torah prohibits wearing clothing that have a mixture of Tzemer Upishtim Yacht. But here, when we talk about the istima, the istima consists of fibers, and that's not something that you can call levishas beged, right? Another condition in kelaim, it's got to be a levisha of a beged, and the beged is made up of wool and lead threads. Here, she hasn't spun these fibers into a thread, and therefore, there's no Isur Kelaim. The Eina Mitama Binagoyim. In other words, the famous parsha that we've discussed many times of Nigei Begadim. And when does it apply, this Tumah of Nigei Begadim, when it doesn't apply? And the answer is, if something doesn't offer any protection or warmth to the wearer, then it doesn't have the status of a Beged, and it's not Makabel Tumas Negoyim of Nigei Begadim. And when we talk about the istima, and you want to know whether the status of an istima is equivalent to that of a regular beged of tzemer upishtan that would be makabel tumas negoyim, the istima is not included in the laws of neither in the laws of Shatnez nor in the laws of Nigei Begadim, because Tzaras is only applicable to a Beged. And if that be the case, we're not willing to define the Istima as a Beged. Now that has a status Lahakel in the case of Tzaras, but it's a chumra in the case of Shabbos, Ein Yotzin Bo L'Rishus HaRavim. And the reason for that is that we need a beged to allow wearing a beged in Rishus HaRavim. This is not a beged. But Mishum Rabbi Shimon Amru, Af Ein Bo Mishum Atoros Kalos, on Daf Nun Chesem and Aleph, which are crowns of brides. Now, this has to do with the sugya at the end of Sota and the Gzeiras Chachamim after the Churban Abayis that extends what we call an Avelus Shebelev throughout the year. And we should actually carry around with us the whole year round a certain element of mourning over the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. And we're going to prohibit midrabanan, all sorts of joyous celebrations and public demonstrations of joy. And we could talk about brides wearing crowns at their weddings. And even that is a demonstration of joy, of intense joy. And it should be prohibited after the Churban HaBayis. Now, an istima is made of wool, of fabric. It's not made of any precious metals like a crown. And therefore, ein bo, it's not included in the iser of a teres kala, the crown of a bride. Now, before the Gemara quoted Rabbi Avo, and he said that the word kavul in our Mishnah refers to this ornamental wooden cap. The Gemara now offers another view, debating the presentation of Rabbi Avo. Ushmuel Omar, Kavla di Avdotnan. We're talking about an Eved, a slave, and we're talking about Kavla. If you remember, we spoke about the fact that Kavla di Avdo is a kind of an emblem for the identification of this Eved. And in the case of a shifcha, for example, she's not allowed to wear an emblem on Shabbos in a Rishus HaRabim. However, she's allowed to wear an ornamental wooden cap, even in Rishus HaRabim. Now, this distinction of Shmuel Omar Kavla di Avdatnan, meaning that the Iser here is on the Shifcha who's going out with this emblem, that Kavla, but he would be more Mekil, allowing in the case of the woolen cap. Now the woolen cap was allowed in Rishus Aram because she wouldn't expose her hair, and would the Eved take off his emblem? That's a little bit strange. I mean, wouldn't that be, in a sense, a rebellion against his master? Umiyam Shmuel, how could Shmuel say this? V'amar Shmuel yotzei ha'eved b'chosam shebetzavaro. They used to wear some sort of a scarf around the neck, and that was an identification, an emblem. And the Eved is allowed to wear this around his neck. Avalo b'chosam shebeksuso, but not an emblem that's attached to his clothing. What's explicit here in the statement of Shmuel is that a slave is allowed to go out with an emblem on the Shabbos. Again, we'll speak about chosam shebeksuso, some sort of an attachment to his clothing, but that which he's wearing on his body as an emblem, as an identification that he's a slave, that's mutter. Now, the Mishnah seems to assume that in the case of a slave's emblem, that's awesome, because Shmuel had identified the Kavla of HaMishnah as the Kavla of the Avda. So how do we reconcile the Mishnah with Shmuel's own statement? Lo kasha. Hadi avad le rabbe. Behadi avad le nafshi. There are two types of emblems. There's the emblem that the master created, and he expects his Eved to wear that, and the Eved would never remove that. But then there's a case where the owner of the slave is not so makpid on this emblem. He's not worried that anyone's going to steal his Eved. And now the Eved himself made an emblem for himself on his own initiative. And now we have to be nervous about that if he wears it in Rishus HaRabin, because he's more apt to remove it and to carry in his hand Dalet Amos, because he doesn't have to be afraid of the master. The master himself wasn't so makpid. This was an emblem that was fashioned not by the master, but by the Eved himself. If it was the emblem that was fashioned by the master, then the slave would never want to remove it. That would incur the wrath of his master. But if he fashioned the emblem himself, and the master is not makpid, then we have to be choshesh that maybe he'll carry it by hand. Fine. Now, b'mayu kimta lahad Shmuel. Let's just, the Gemara says, take a moment and contemplate the ruling of Shmuel permitting, in a case of the emblem that was created by the master, to wear that emblem on Shabbos, because the Ovid Le Rabbe. Now, in the case of an emblem that was fashioned by the slave himself, it would be, shall I say, bring Nachas Ruach to the master if the slave were to wear this. And therefore, although we could be Mekil in a chatzer, we're not going to be mekil in a Rishus HaRabim. Now, what that means is that, let's take a chatzer. If the slave wears the emblem that he himself fashioned in a chatzer, then you sort of speak, I don't know what word to use, but cement the relationship, a warm relationship between the master and the slave. And therefore, the Rabbanan are going to allow this to take place in a chatzer, whereas if he goes out into Rishus HaRabim, then this would not really touch on that, shall we say, intimate relationship between the master and the slave, if he were to take off the emblem. Now let's go on to Chosem Shebeksuso. And we're talking about an emblem on his clothing. This he's certainly not allowed to wear anywhere. And the Gemara says, "Amai lo," he's not going to remove the emblem. And again, we're talking about an emblem that was created by the master. He doesn't want to incur the wrath of the master and do a rebellious act and take off the emblem. So the Gemara says that Dilma Mifsik. We have another issue in the case of an emblem when you wear that outside of Shabbos, because it might become detached. And then when it falls off the slave, let's say, for example, if it falls off his ksus, his beged, it might break, because these emblems were made of very sensitive, fragile substances like clay or earthenware, and they shatter once they fall off the garment. And mirsas umikpale. At that point, the slave is afraid that his master will accuse him of deliberately destroying that emblem, which the slave might be motivated to do in order to deny the public the knowledge that he's a slave and hide that information from the public. So what does the slave do out of this fear that he will be suspect of having deliberately broken this emblem? Mikpale. He's going to fold his cloak. Umachisle akatve. He's going to carry it over his shoulder. In other words, he's going to cover the fact that the emblem is not attached. It won't be visible because he threw over his shoulder a scarf or some sort of article of clothing. Kidder Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yochanan, Hayotze betalis mekupeles. If a person takes any sort of a beged, a cloak, and he folds it up and throws it over his shoulders, munachas lo ktefa b'shabes chayiv chatos, because that's not a malbush that you were wearing derech malbush. And Shmuel is of the opinion that although we don't have to be choshesh that the slave will deliberately remove an emblem that was made by his master, but if this emblem might theoretically fall and break and shatter, what we have to be afraid of is that maybe the Eved will wrap something around his shoulder in order to hide the fact that the emblem had fallen and broken. V'chi ha di amar le Shmuel le Rav Chinina bar Shilo kulu rabbanan de Beresh Galusa. All the rabbis of the Resh Galusa lo lifku besarbele chasime. Shmuel says that they are not allowed to go out with the cloaks they carry. Now, what it means, these cloaks have the emblem of the Resh Galusa on them. And again, we're afraid that if these emblems come loose and they fall off, then the Rabban and the Beresh Galusa might be tempted to throw a cloak over their shoulder. And now Shmuel turns to Rav Chinina, who is apparently one of the rabbis of the Resh Galusa, and he says to him, Lebar Minach, you're the exception to the rule. Why? Delokapti Allah de Beresh Galusa. You have such a close, intimate relationship with the Resh Galusa that he's not makpid if you go out without this emblem on your cloak. Therefore, you'd never be tempted to fold a cloak over to hide the fact that you're missing the emblem which fell and smashed. In any event, this entire statement of Shmuel illustrates that the emblem problem, when it's attached to the clothing, and the reason why we want to be machmir going out on Shabbos, is because of the concern that he may drop, or the emblem may get detached and fall on the ground, and he may fold a cloak over his shoulder, which is called Shalot Derech Levisha, and it's a Chiv Chatos. Now, Gufa, Omar Shmuel, let's go back to Shmuel. Yotzei Ha'evi B'chosim Shebe Tzavaro V'lo B'chosim Shebe Ksuso. Tanya Nami Hochli, want to quote a Braisa to support Shmuel. Yotzei Ha'evi B'chosim Shebe Tzavaro V'lo B'chosim Shebe Biksuso. So we're not afraid in the case of the chosam shebitzavaro, something that's around his neck, but we are afraid of a chosam shebiksuso, you know, something that he attaches to his clothing. Now we have another brice which seems to contradict this brice at Tam Yinam Yochi, and Ruminu lo yetza evid bechosam shebitzavaro. V'lo b'chosim shebik suso. So this Braisa, the second Braisa, is machmir in the case of chosim shebitzavaro. And then the Braisa says, v'zeh v'zeh ein mekablim tumah, that an emblem is not considered a kli. And in the parasha of Kabbalah's tumah, we're talking about a kli or a beged. But this emblem is not a beged. You know, it doesn't protect his body. It's not worn on his body to warm up his body, so it's not a garment. It's not a utensil. It's not a kli. And therefore, its status is that it's not mekabel tumah. And here we see a contrast between the first braisa and the second braisa. The first braisa allows a slave to go out with this emblem around its neck. The braisa here says it's asur. Now the braisa, the second braisa, continues and says, lo bizug shebitzavaro. We're not going to allow the slave to go out with a bell. Apparently, this was another way that the slave presented himself as a slave. He would tie a bell around his neck. Aval yotze hu bizug shebeksuso. He's allowed to go out in Rosh Hashanah Rabbin with a bell that's attached to his clothing, because that which is attached to his clothing is an ornament. It's a tachshit. As far as something which is a bell worn around his neck, we'll get to that a little bit later on in the sugya. V'zeh v'zeh mekablin tumah. In the case of the bell is considered a kli as far as Kabbalah's tumah is concerned, because it is a tachshit. V'lo teitze behema lo b'chosim shebitzavara v'lo b'chosim shebiksusa. In the case of an animal, it cannot go out with an emblem neither around its neck nor with an emblem that's attached to his clothing. The clothing of the animal here refers to kinds of blankets and stuff that we use to cover the horse and other clothing that we use to make sure that the animal doesn't get dirty. But as far as a chosam, an emblem, is concerned, that's prohibited on Shabbos. That's considered masa. And it undermines the mitzvah of Laman Yenuach Sharcha. V'lo bizug shebek susa. V'lo bizug shebek tzavar. In the case of an animal, we're not going to allow for an ornament on the animal. A tachshit. We said that a zug, a bell, could be for a human being a tachshit. But not for an animal. An animal can wear clothing or something that protects the animal, but something that adorns the fashion of the animal, that's not acceptable. So an animal is not allowed to go out with items on Shabbos because if an animal is marked or adorned, it might be a masa, because this is the way you take an animal to be sold in the marketplace, and we discussed that at great length. V'zeh v'zeh ein mekablim tumah. In other words, the emblems and the bells are not susceptible to Kabbalah's tumah. Even if bells are considered a tachshit, that's not enough to make them susceptible to Kabbalah's tumah, because a tachshit for an animal is not called a tachshit with regard to tumah. And that's a sugya that we'll have a little bit later on. But in any event, when we go back to the Reisha of this Braisa, it says explicitly, Oyetze ha'eved b'chosam shebitzavaro, and that's against the first Braisa that says, Yotze eved b'chosam shebitzavaro. So the Gemara says, Lema ha di ovid le rabbe, veha di ovid le iu lenafshe. Perhaps the first Braisa is mekil, because in the case of an emblem that was made by its master, the slave will not have the chutzpah to take it off. In the Braisa Shnia, the second Braisa, we're talking about a chumra here of Ein Yotzin, because we're talking about an emblem that was made by the slave himself. As we said before, in such a case, he might be tempted to take off the emblem. The Gemara says, lo. We don't have to explain the second brisa as referring to an emblem with this ukimta that was created by the slave himself, but rather both brises, the Avile Rabbe, were addressing the case of an emblem that was created by the master, v'kan v'shel mateches, v'kan v'shel tit. There are two types of emblems. There's an emblem that's made of metal. There's an emblem that's made of clay. Ukir Rabba, Rab Nachman, Omar Rabba Barvut explained this distinction. Dovra makpidol of Rabbo Yotzinbo, v'dovra shein makpidol of, in a case of Dovra makpidol of Rabbo Ein Yotzinbo, the Rav is makpid because we're talking about an expensive emblem that's made of metal. In such a case, Ein Yotzinbo. Why? Because, let's say it gets detached, this attached emblem falls apart, and for sure the Eved is going to be scared if he comes home and he tells the master that he lost the expensive emblem that's made out of metal. He's in trouble. He's going to carry this from the ground home through Rosh Hashanah Dalet Amos. But Dovah Shein Makpidol, let's say it's made of clay or other cheap, inexpensive substances, then the Eved doesn't have to be in fear of notifying his master that now it's time to change this emblem, replace it with another, because this emblem fell and broke. He's not going to bother picking up the broken pieces of clay, of an emblem fashioned by clay. And if that be the case, we can understand the first brisa that we're not afraid that the emblem might fall off and he'll carry it in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim because it's an emblem of clay. However, the second brisa that's more machmir, that's talking about a slave who's going out with an emblem of metal. And if the slave doesn't come back with that emblem, then he's in deep trouble. So he's in a state of fear, and he's going to unfortunately collect this emblem and carry it back in order to make sure that he doesn't incur the wrath of his master. And the Gemara now wants to be medayik from the lashon of the second brayse, Ochina Mistabra, Midiktoni Zeveze Ein Mekablim Tuma. And this implies that the emblem is made of a material which would be Mekabel Tuma. Again, it's not Mekabel Tuma for the reasons that we discussed earlier. And it's not a kli, and it's not a beged, and so forth and so on. But Iyamet Bishle Mishal Mateches, if we're talking about an emblem made of Mateches in the second Brisa, then that's understandable. Why? Dahani hu delo kamakabli tuma. These emblems are not makabel tuma because they're made of Mateches. And a kli Mateches is not susceptible to tuma unless it's got a base kibul. And here we're talking about an emblem that doesn't have a base kibul. Is hani hu delo makabli tuma, ha kelim did hu makabli tuma. If let's say you made a utensil which has a clay kibul, it has a receptacle in it out of metal, then it would be makabel tuma. El imam shel b'shel tit havitnan. Now we're talking about a tuma of clay, a clay cheres or clay glolim, clay avonim, clay adoma, and here the difference is as follows. Hani hu delo makabli tuma, because he made it as an emblem, which is not a kli or a beged, therefore it's not kakam. Ha kelim did hu, if he made a kli out of a kli cheres, makabli tuma. So the Gemara now asks us as a question, ha kelim did hu makabli tuma v'atnan. We have a brais, atanya, clay avonim, clay glolim, clay avonim, clay adoma. And now clay adom includes that which is made of clay, is ein mekablim tuma lo midivrei Torah lo midivrei sofrim, because this is not called a chashuv a kli. You know, it's made of unbaked clay or of earth, and this is not the clay cheres of the Torah, which is baked. This is, again, is unbaked clay. So he just takes clay and he fashions it as a kli. That's not a kli as far as Kabbalah's tumah is concerned. Only a kli cheres, which is baked in a kiln. Kli adom is not, and therefore a kli adom, in this case a clay kli, is not makabel tumah, not even midrabanan. Shma minah shel mateches. We see clearly that this brisa is talking about an emblem made of metal, and that's why it says hava ha delo makabli tumah shma minah. So let's just give an overview of what we learned, a kind of a sikum and review the following. With regard to an emblem of a slave on Shabbos in Rishus HaRabbim, if the emblem is made of metal, then it cannot be worn outside of Rishus HaRabbim on Shabbos, because if, heaven forbid, it falls off, the Eved is in a state of fright, and certainly it will be tempted to carry it home. And that was the law that we saw in the second brisa. An emblem that's made of clay, let's assume it was fashioned by the master, then you're allowed to wear it around your neck. The Eved would certainly be afraid to remove it because it was made by the master. Again, if it had fallen off and smashed, the Eved would not be tempted to carry it back in Rishus HaRabbim, into the Rishus of the master, because it's worthless. So if the emblem again is made of clay by the master, then Miman of Shachi would never be tempted to carry it in Rishus HaRabbim. He would never take it off because he's afraid of the Adon who made this emblem. And if it fell, he would, you know, let it go, and it smashes, and he would not be tempted to carry it back. Now, when we get, however, to the case of an emblem on his ksus, on his cloak, there, if the emblem were to fall off, the slave might fold over his cloak and conceal the fact that he lost the emblem, but that's only if the emblem was fashioned by the master. If the emblem was fashioned by the slave himself, then let's say if it's around his neck, then since, at least according to what we saw earlier in the sugya, since it's very easy in a case of an emblem that's created by the slave, he might actually, in other words, the Adon is not makpid. So therefore, we're going to be very machmir in this case of an emblem that was created by the slave himself, because he may actually remove it, because his that would not be seen as an act of rebellion. And amongst the rabbim, maybe he wants to conceal the fact that he's an Eved. And that was the law that we saw in the Mishnah. Omar Mar, in the second verse, we learned below Zug Shebet Savaro, that the bell around its neck is Asur, because it's not considered a Takshit. Aval Yotzu B'Zug Shebet Suso. Let's emphasize that there were two parts of the verse as far as Zug Shebet Savaro, as opposed to Zug Shebet Suso. And there was a time, there was a part of the Brice that was addressing the case of a human being, of a slave. And there was the Sefer of the Brice that was talking about a zug, a bell on the animal's clothing. Now, in the case of the animal, let's just remind ourselves that the Brice was machmir in all cases of a bell, whether it's on his clothing or it's around his neck. That's because there's no takshit for an animal. But in the case of an Eved, the Braisa was machalek between Zug Shebet Savor, which is Asur, as opposed to Zug Shebet Suso, a bell that was attached to his clothing, because that would be a takshit, and a human being does have a takshit. So let's see if we can understand this distinction between Zug Shebet Savaro, Aval Yotzu B'Zug Shebet Suso. So Gemara says, wait a minute, Zug Shabitzavara Milo, what's the problem with the Zug Shabitzavara Dilma Mifsik Vyasi Lasuye? Maybe the bell will get loosened, it'll be detached, and the Evid will be tempted to carry the bell home. Is Zug Shabiksuso Nami? Lechush Dilma Mifsak Vyasi Lasuye. Even in the case of a bell that's attached to his clothing, it might get loose, and he might pick it up if it falls and carry it back to Rishus, to the Rishus Hayochid. In other words, it was sewn onto the garment. And here we're not going to be afraid that maybe the bell will come detached because it's sewn on. And that apparently is limited to the case where it's sewn onto his clothing. Ukirav Huna. The Omer of Huna Breid Rabbi Yeshua Kolshu Arug Lo Gazur. Whatever is woven is not included in the decree. So what we have now is the following. You have bells that are sewn onto the clothing, and that's permitted. If you have emblems on the clothing, and perhaps that means even an emblem that's sewn onto a beged, that's Asur. So Tos explains simply that all items of clothing can theoretically be decorated with bells. And Chazal did not trouble people to remove bells from clothing. I mean, that would sort of, you know, degrade them. But in the case of emblems, those are not worn on all cloaks. They don't adorn cloaks to which they're attached. Therefore, Chazal required that they be removed, even if they're sewn into the beged. Because people might wear emblems outside even when they're not sewn in. So that distinction between sewn and not sewn is not going to apply to emblems, but it will apply to bells. Now, this statement in the Braisa, the way Rav Huna explains the Braisa, the Gemara itself explains the Braisa based on Rav Huna, is a question of woven items that bears on the laws of Tvila and Chatzitza. And when he says, Kolshu Arug Lo Gazru, what does that mean in terms of Chatzitza? Rav Huda made a statement with regard to the issue of wearing these Arugs, these woven garments outside in Rishus HaRabim. I'm not sure what he would say, Rav Huna, about Chatzitza as far as mikvah is concerned. But I'm going to suggest a Punkva Kertesvar that Adarabba, we said back on Daf Nun Zion, that in the case of woven woolen garments, because of their constituency, the way that the water could enter in through the holy parts, so to speak, of a woven garment, that it's not a chatzitza. Rav Huna here is going a step further, and he's saying that any woven garment is not included in that list of items that may not be worn on Shabbos. So there is, I think, a mirror image here, a parallel between the issue of Chatzitza and the issue of the decree regarding wearing them in Rishus HaRabim. And in both cases, Rav Huna is going to say that Kol Shu Arig Lo Gazru, and it's not a Chatzitza, and those two halachas are interdependent. Now, Omar Mar, we go back to the Brice. It says, Lo Seitze Behema, Lo Bechosim Shebet Zavara, Lo Bechosim Shebet Ksusa, Lo Bezug Shebet Zavara, Lo Bezug Shebet Ksusa, Vize Vize Ein Mekablim Tuma. Fine. So we discussed the fact that with regard to an animal, the dinim change, and although you might say for a human being, a bell is considered a tachshit, and perhaps a tachshit, since it's not exactly a beged, it's not makabel tuma. But now we get to the case of a behema. So let's see the Gemara now here on the bottom of Daf Nun Ches Amud Aleph as we turn to Nun Ches Amud Beis. Vizug de behema ein makablin tuma. How can we assume that with regard to a bell, the bell of an animal is not makabel tuma? Reminu zug shel behema tmeya, which means the zug of an animal, the bell worn on an animal, is tmeya. It is susceptible to kabbalas tuma v'shel deles tahora. But the bell that you put on a door, that's not makabel tuma. Now the door itself is not makabel tuma. That's because it's mechubel karka. And mechubel karka is not makabel tuma. But in the case of a bell, that's not mechubel karka. We would have assumed that it's a separate entity, and therefore it should be makabel tuma. This brisa is establishing that the bell for a door is mamish one chefza, it's one part of the door, and therefore it has the same din of the mechubel karka, and it's not makabel tuma. Shel deles v'aso lebehema. Let's say, for example, you had a bell for a door, and then you converted it into a bell for an animal, tmeya. Now it's makabel tuma because you reestablished its function, you rededicated its function. Again, you never changed the bell physically in any way. You just took it off the door, you put it around the neck of the animal. And now, from this point on, it's now susceptible to makabel tuma. Again, not because of the maisa of hanging it around the animal's neck. That's not a physical change in the object. But nevertheless, it's because you re-established or redirected the purpose of this bell. And that's a machshava that makes it makabel tuma. And the brisa is going to say now, in the opposite case, shel behema, you had a bell that was made for an animal, and now I saw delis, you took it off the animal and you put it on the door as a doorbell, is afal pi shechibra ledelis ukva'u b'masmerim, even if he ties that, he fixes the bell to the door, you know, with bolts and nails, is tame. It remains susceptible to kabbalas tuma. So what's interesting is that in the first case, shel delis v'aso lebehema, now it's tmeya because you reestablish the intention or the purpose of the bell. And in the case, in the opposite direction of a behema, and you made it into a delis, You don't, even though again you knocked it down into the delis, you had fixed it into the delis, but nevertheless, it retains its original status. Now again, we have to emphasize the fact that when you attach the bell to the door, even if you nail it down, but nevertheless, that's not a physical change. The bell is unaffected. But you might say that its status should be affected because of your designation, of your intention, your machshava. And now it should be considered the bell of a door, which we said the bell of a door is tar. So let's go on in the brisa. The brisa says that we have the following two principles. Principle number one is kol hakelim yardim lidei tuma v'machshava. You can have something that's not a utensil as far as kabbalas tuma, but b'machshava, if you decide that you want to use it as a kli, and in your mind, through your machshava, you redirect the purpose of this particular object, then is yardim b'machshava. Now, it, as a result of your thought, this becomes a kli, and it's makabel tuma. But ein olim midei tumasam el b'shinui maisa. But if you want to change the status of something that was makabel tuma, then you have to make a physical change. Now, as far as we're concerned, the Braisa teaches us that the bell of an animal is susceptible to Kabbalah's Tumah. The Braisa before that we studied, gave us the exact opposite conclusion, and it said, Zevezeh ein mekablim Tumah, that the bell of an animal is not mekabel Tumah. Lo kasha hada islay inbal, hada leslay inbal. And the question is here, whether or not the bell has a useful purpose. For example, if it has an inbal, which is this that piece inside the bell, you know, that goes back and forth, bangs against the bell. In fancy English, they call it a clapper. That makes the bell susceptible to Kabbalah's Tumah because it has a useful purpose. And we'll see exactly what you do with this bell in a minute. But if the bell has no clapper, then according to at least the first Braisa, for sure, it's not susceptible to Kabbalah's Tumah. And that reflects also the Braisa's ruling with regard to bells that are worn on a slave, as the Gemara is going to define. So the Gemara asks me, Manavshach, E Manahu, if you tell me the bell is considered a kli, and it's makabel tumah because of its status of a kli, is afal pi deles bei inbal. Even if it doesn't have this clapper, it should still be makabel tumah. Vilav monahu. If a bell is not a kli, is inbal mashvile mono, all of a sudden because you add the clapper element, it becomes a kli. The Gemara didn't understand what the logic of it. If the bell is not viewed as an ornament, and that's why it's a kli and it's makabel tumah, then that should apply in all cases, even if it has a clapper. So Gemara says, in Kidder Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Omri Rabbi Yonah's son, the Omer Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Omri Rabbi Yonah's son, Minayin Lamashmiya Kol Bikli Matecha Shu Tomei. We have a special pasuk that teaches us that a metal kli that produces sounds is a kli as far as Kabbalah's Tumah, and it's susceptible to Kabbalah's Tumah. Shenemar, the pasuk says, interesting, this pasuk is in the parasha of Klei Midjan, after the Melcham of Midjan, and they took various kelim as booty from the defeated Midjanim. And the Torah says that you want to use it for eating purposes, kol asher yavo, kol dover asher yavo be'esh, taviru be'esh. This is the source for what we call libun, that you have to get rid of the blia of isur that's inside, that's absorbed inside the pot, and kol sheh lo yovo be'esh is tavir b'mayim, then you need only agola. So the Gemara asks, the Gemara derives that afilu dibur yovo be'esh. In other words, it says kol dover asher yovo be'esh. That's a superfluous word. It could have said kol asher yovo be'esh. Why did the Torah add the word dover? To teach me something, it may know inyan, has nothing to do with purifying a kli of its blias isur, but rather it has something to do with Kabbalah's Tumah. And the subject of Kabbalah's Tumah is not totally foreign to that particular section, that parasha in the Torah, because that parasha of the Torah with regard to Klei Minyan addresses not just the halachas of Isur v'Heta and Blias Isur, but also Tumah v'Tara, because the Torah says that when you acquire these kelim from the Goyim, you have to be metayer them by putting them in a mikvah. But in any event, as far as Kabbalah's Tumah is concerned, the word Dovar is coming to teach us, so this drashi equating Dovar with Dibur is going to teach us that anything that produces a dibur, a sound, is subject to Kabbalah's Tumah, and it's included in the parish of Tumah. So you can classify as a utensil, as a kli for susceptibility to Tumah, simply because of its ability to produce a sound. And Tosus explains that in the case of a bell, which produces a sound, if it has the inbal, then it's something that, in a sense, serves man, because man hears the sound, and that's how he finds out where the animals are, like in the cows in Switzerland, right, that have these gigantic bells there over on the beautiful, you know, hills of Switzerland. Now, at this point, the Gemara thinks that a bell is not considered a tachshit, it's makabel tuma by virtue of the fact that it produces sound. So a bell with a clapper will be makabel tuma. Without a clapper, it cannot produce a sound. It's not makabel tuma. And the Gemara asks, b'mai ukimta? Okay, so I see that this sugi keeps going on and on. I think we'll have to take a bit of a break now. So let's just see where we got up to. In the middle of Nun Ches Amid Beis, approximately, roughly about 13, 14, maybe 15 lines down from the top, b'mai ukimta. So b'lineder, in the next shiur, we'll sort of just recap what we said, and we'll be able to pick it up from where we left off.